2001. Just finished out a tape. Then just recuperating from operation and had in the hospital. I hadn't been out of the hospital and home very long when the fellow at the plant moved into the Tulsa office, and they told me to move into his company house he'd been living in, so we moved right out to the plant then from Sepulpa. When I had gone into the hospital in Tulsa, I didn't know how long I was going to be in there. The doctor that was out of town that was supposed to have examined me when I went in to Tulsa, and his partner had talked to me and sent me out to the hospital for a GI series examination, and so I didn't know what was going to happen then. So I went out, went in the hospital, and business agent of the hospital said, how are you going to pay for this? And those days there wasn't any such thing as group hospitalization insurance, so it was coming out of my pocket. And I told him, well, I don't know for sure how long I'll be in here. Right now I'm coming in for a GI gastrointestinal examination, x-rays, and he said, well, that'll be about $65. I said, well, I can pay that. So they made the x-rays, and one thing and another, and the day they finished up, the doctor that was supposed to take care of me returned to town. He came out and checked me, checked the x-rays, and told me that I was going to have had a choice of two things. I could go on a medical treatment, or I could have an operation. Medical treatment, he said, was only 50-50 proposition, but the operation was a 98% deal that I would be okay. So I chose the operation, as I didn't want to be a fool with anything else, as long as I'd have to, which was running a tube through my nose into my stomach every night and pumping it out. And I didn't like that idea of running that tube through my nose down into my stomach every night. So I chose to have the operation. Well, when the hospital was told that, this business agent sent word for me to come down and talk to him. I was on the fifth floor. I told the nurse that brought me that place that it was just as close from down there up here as it was for me to go down there and talk to him. So he waylaid my wife. She came on up and wanted to know what to tell the fella. I said, well, tell him that I'll pay him $10 a month when I get out of the hospital, and if that won't satisfy him, why, I don't know what will. And so my wife went back down and told him that. He says, why, that is out of the question. Says, we're not running a collection agency or anything. Says, what if I was to call a big store downtown and tell them that you would give them $10 a month if they would deliver you a certain refrigerator? She says, well, we'd have trouble getting home in time before they had the refrigerator down there. And she says it would. Yep, I sure would. So he called down to the store, and they told practically the same thing. That says the first question we'd ask would be, when are you going to be at home so we can bring it in? And so he finally said, well, they'd have to accept that if that was all they could do. So that was the arrangement we made. Also, in those days, after an operation, you did a lot of recuperating in bed before you ever got up to walk around. So after I'd laid there in the hospital after the operation, they gave me, doctor told me one day, he says, well, if you can get an ambulance to cart you home where you can stay in bed at home for a week or so, why, you can go home tomorrow, which was going to be Sunday. And so I told Dot to find an ambulance and how much it would cost. And so she came back after a bit and said she'd got a hold of an ambulance, and said they'd haul me home for $14, which is about a dollar a mile is what we'd have to go. And I couldn't believe that they was going to do that for that price. She called them back and checked, and they said that was right, $14. So the next day I went home in an ambulance. It was a beautiful Sunday afternoon in late October. Actually, it was Halloween Eve, and I was going along, and cars would drive up alongside of an ambulance and try to see what the trouble was and who was in there. I'd raise up and look out. I'd press my face against the window. Boy, they would scoot on out right fast. It was really funny how they would get out of there when they saw me looking out. Not long after I'd got home on the ambulance and got it installed in bed at home and was settling down, some old school friends from my college days came in to visit. They'd been out of the territory for a while and just moved back and decided to come see us. And they hadn't known I'd been in the hospital and I just got home. So we settled down for a nice visit. And that was during that time was when the invasion from Mars radio program took place. I didn't know anything about it till much later when I heard it on 10 o'clock news on the radio that night, which was a great surprise to us. We hadn't known that anything like that had happened. I laid around there in bed then for a week, which was very galling to me because I felt all right and thought I didn't need to be in bed. The doctors all said I was to stay in bed and recuperate. So that is what I was doing. And I wished that I could have got out of there sooner. I think I'd have been better off if I had it. After about after that week was over, laying in bed, I went back to work, and they told me then that the engineer there at this plant was going to be transferred in the next few days, actually on the 1st of November, and I mean on the middle of November, into the Tulsa office, and that I was to take his place in being the office manager and engineer at the plant in his place, and that he was going to move into Tulsa as quick as his house was ready, which they thought would be about, that he'd got in Tulsa, which they thought would be in about 3 weeks. Actually, when he went into Tulsa on the 14th, on the 13th, they told him his house would be ready the next day, and that his house would be ready that next day, and that he could move. So I didn't know that. The next morning, I was eating breakfast. I'd gone out to see if the paper had arrived, and it hadn't. I went in, ate breakfast, went back out to see about the paper, and that was about 6:30 in the morning, and there was a moving truck backing up to my door. And I says, "Huh, am I moving?" I says, "Yep, you're moving." And he says, "You work for Gulf, and you're expecting to move down to the plant?" I says, "That's right." I says, "Well, you're moving then right now." So I went back in and told Doc we got things ready and moved out. After everything had been put on the moving van, I was going around through the house looking to see if there'd been anything forgotten, and found my hat that I very seldom ever wore up on a shelf of a closet, and incidentally, I'm still carrying that hat in my car. Anyway, I reached up and pulled the hat down, and down come a $20 bill fluttering down, which was most surprising to me because I didn't know we had any $20 bills stashed away. I asked Doc about it. "Oh, I'd forgotten that $20 bill," says, "I stashed that up there while you were in the hospital, and I completely forgot it. So I'd put it up there for emergency purposes." So we were $20 richer than what we thought we were, which at that time $20 was $20 and then some in today's figures. As we were leaving town, we went by the real estate people that we rented the house from. I'd paid the rent for the whole month of November, and went in and told them that we had moved out that morning and that we wouldn't be living there anymore. And the fellow says, "Oh, well, that's too bad. I sure hate to lose you as a renter, but as what you've got is so much better, I sure hate to see you leave. You see, this is the 15th, you're paid up through this month, so," says, "here's $12.50 back that we won't charge you for this 2 weeks. Says, we're doing this because you were such a good renter and kept your rent paid up so well. And we hope that we might be able to serve you again sometime." That was another $12.50 that we didn't expect to have. This company house, they held the rent for it out of our check every month, and that amounted to $2 a room, and it was actually a four-room house. but with the back porch made into a room, which didn't count, so $8 a month for the rent with all the utilities furnished. However, we had DC, 110 DC electricity at the place, at the company house. So we had to get the motor changed in our refrigerator to a DC motor, and had to get a gadget that converted the 110 DC into 110 AC to run a radio. That wasn't a very big job, very hard to do. They had things like that even in those days to do things like that. The next day, I took over the running of the office. The fellow that had left had made out a list of what had to be done every day and the order that it was to be done in. I found out that there was bukus of reports to be made and typed. I was one of those typers that used the hunt, peck, and swear system, and so it took me some time to make those reports. Some of them I thought was unnecessary, and after a while, work piled up, some work piled up, and some special work they'd give me to do, and one of them that it took the longest time to do, it was one that I didn't think was necessary, and I didn't make it and send it in a couple of weeks, and a fellow out of the Tulsa office called me and wanted to know where that report was. I said, I didn't make it. And he says, well, it's got to be made. I said, well, what do you do with it? He says, I file it. I said, does anybody ever look at it? Well, he says, I don't know. I said, well, I'm not going to make it anymore then. If it's just filed and put away, I don't know why it needs to be made, because after a couple of weeks, it don't mean anything anyway. And so he went to the, took one of them to the boss man, the head of the gasoline department, and said that I wasn't making that anymore, and that I said I wasn't going to make it anymore. He looked at it and he said, I don't know why in the world he should. I've never seen this report, and I've been here in this job for now going on 8 years, and I don't know why in the world it should be made. And he says, what do you do with it when you get it? He says, well, I file it where they told me to file it. And he said, and the files is getting pretty big and full, aren't they? Yeah, he says, they are. And nobody ever looks at it. He says, not that in my knowledge has anybody ever looked at it. He says, well, I agree with the fellow down there then that there's no need in wasting time in making the thing. So he called me up and he says, what reports do you think shouldn't be made? I told him I could design a lot better reports and have a lot more time if I would... I only had to make those out in pencil. He says, well, that's a good deal. He says, you design a new report to cover everything that you think is necessary, and we will review the things. So I did, and it turned out that they accepted mine. I'd make morning reports in pencil, send them in to the Tulsa office, and they'd get girls in the stenographic department to type, and that freed me up to do some engineering work that needed to be done then, and not having to type all those reports. every morning. As I said before, I had to be at work in the morning around 6:30 to meet the pipeline gauger that run our gasoline out that we made, and consequently I'd get off, take 30 minutes at noon, and then I get off at around 2:30 in the afternoon, which left a lot of time for me for loafing and stuff. So I went to work designing a slide rule to figure pipeline sizes. That is a very complicated empirical formula that used to figure those pipeline sizes, and it was a very tedious job to do by hand, as there was some complicated figuring in the matter. This formula was Q equals 48.76 times the square root of initial pressure squared minus the final pressure squared to times D to the 5 1/2 power over L times G, where Q is equal to the amount of gas in thousands of cubic feet per 24 hours, and P1, initial pressure, minus P2, final pressure, and D, the diameter of the pipe to the 5 1/2 power, divided by L, length of the line in feet, times the specific gravity of the gas. This P1 minus P2, P1 squared minus P2 squared, divided times the diameter of the pipe in inches to the 5 1/2 power, divided by the length of the line in feet, times the gravity of the gas, and finding the square root of that was a very tedious job. And so I was figuring out a slide rule that would solve that equation in one or two slips of a slide rule. Of course, everything is known there, with the exception of the diameter of the pipe or the quantity of gas. If you had a pipeline of a certain diameter, you could use that and solve for Q and find out how much gas it has passed, the initial pressure and the final pressure was nearly always known, and the length of the line in feet was usually known, and the gravity of the gas was known. So the biggest question in developing a slide rule for that was finding the difference in P1 squared minus P2 squared. And after a number of hours and trial and error, I finally developed a formula, a scales for a slide rule that was one setting of the slide and movement of the indicator would give me the result of P1 squared minus P2 squared. Of course, if you were solving for the diameter of the pipe, you had to come out with a diameter, square root of a diameter of the pipe to the 5 1/3 or 5 1/2 power. I figured that it took me approximately 100 hours to develop that, those two scales, to find that difference between P1 squared minus P2 squared. After I had got that figured out, the rest of the slide rule computation was quite easy to get on a slide rule, and so in a matter of 3 or 4 more hours, I had the scales all designed for the slide rule. And I took the, then I started making a prototype, drawing it out on paper, and I pasted the paper to a wooden, old wooden slide rule I had. I wasn't using anymore, hardly, and it, worked out quite well. I took the thing then to a head of the mathematics department of the Texas Tulsa University and showed it to him, and he says, told him what the equation was, and he said, well, that you can't figure out any scales for that P1 minus P2 figure. And I said, well, give me a problem. So he says, okay, and he gave it to me, and just a few slips I had to figure for him. So I said, is that right? And he said, well, I happen to know that it is. He said, but I still say that those scales for your P1 minus P2, P1 squared minus P2 squared is impossible to get on a slide rule. Well, I says, there it is. He says, well, I still can't see how you can do it mathematically. I then, the moisture, of course, changed the paper on the sticks I had glued there, and it wasn't accurate as I would like it. So I then got me some white celluloid type plastic and put that on a slide rule and made me a little machine that I could do the measurements and scratch the numbers on there and stamped on figures for the die, and had my slide rule, which I could use and figure pipeline sizes by. And it worked very well from any figures. The scales were numbered from 1 to 10, and if, from 0 to 10, rather. And all I had to do then was divide any other figures by whatever necessary to bring it down to within that 10 scale. If it was 1,000 pounds, I'd divide it by 100. About that time, the International Oil Exposition was being held in Tulsa. I went to the exposition and found that Kruppel and Esser had a booth there showing their all their different kind of equipment, particularly slide rules, that would help engineers out. And I met a young fellow there who was an engineer with the Kruppel and Esser people. I showed him the slide rule and worked it out. He said, "I'll tell you what you do. You take that thing." Remember now, this was in 1938. He says, "Take this to a post office, draw up, take these paper printed scales that you've got figured out, put them in an envelope, and with a description of how the thing works and what it's for, and take it to the post office and have them address it to yourself and mail it, and you will have a postmark on it, sealed, giving notice that you are the designer of it, and that will protect it until you can find out whether it's patentable and saleable or not." It says, "And then give us this sample, and we will see what can be done, because it seems to be a very excellent piece of equipment for gas engineers, particularly, to have in their equipment." So I did that. Kruppel and Esser took the prototype, and they turned it over to a research marketing research organization. And they researched the marketing deal on it for about 6 months and reported to Kruppel and Esser that they could be approximately 10,000 of them sold in a year's time at $20 a slide rule, retailing for $20. At that time, a log-log duplex slide rule that Kruppel and Esser made retailed for $15. Kruppel and Esser came back to me and said, "Well, at $10,000, 10,000 rules at $20 a rule, is only $200,000 a year sales. For instance, our Log Log Duplex, we sell $3 million worth of those a year. The die is to mark the Log Log Duplex cost us $1 million, and this one is still more complicated. So I would say the dies to manufacture it would be in the neighborhood of $1.5 million to make the dies. And those dies have to be those machines that do the marking, costing $1.5 million, would have to be replaced to keep accurate about every 3 to 4 years. So with a $200,000 gross sales, we couldn't afford to manufacture them. We're sorry. I then started figuring out, trying to decide how I could manufacture the things myself. And I contacted a dye people, and they said they could make the dies to stamp them out for probably $5,000, and the press to hold the dies and do the stamping would be another $5,000, and they thought it would be a good deal. About that time, not long after I found that all out, they work got so that I didn't have anything much to do with it for a while. So I started using some spare time then to building a power lawnmower, which there was no ordinary power lawnmower for sale at that time. I took the old hand lawnmower and put on a electric motor and belt and drove it, and made my electric driven power lawnmower that worked quite well. The lawn around this company house that I lived in had a great big lawn, and it was too much for me to run a old ordinary push type lawnmower in while I was still recuperating from that operation. Things rocked along then from then till about a week or so before Thanksgiving. There was nothing happening much. This was Thanksgiving of 1939. They word came out that Gulf had lost a price fixing, gasoline price fixing suit, and had been fined $5 million, which used the money they had set aside to do all this special work. So all of us had been hired for that special work. Some 150 of us were left, that out of the 200 they'd hired originally. We were told that money was gone and that they didn't have anything for us to do. And as of when we finished our vacation we had earned, we would go we would be off then and working no more for golf. Actually, it was the 15th day of November when they told us this and told me that I had 2 weeks vacation coming, I could take those and that'd be the end of my work with golf. So I proceeded to start looking for another position, and I applied to several places. Finally, I heard that the Williams Brothers Pipeline Constructing Company was going to build a pipeline from Pensacola, Florida to Atlanta, Georgia, a gasoline pipeline. And so I immediately went over to see the people at the Williams Brothers and I talked to the president. I had the vice president in charge of construction, that is who I was talking to, the Williams Brothers, and I went in to see him, and while I was waiting, I'd heard him talking and knew he was a sort of an active and rough and tough. So I went in just as rough and tough. Before I got through at golf, I had written an article on the design of fractionating equipment for natural gasoline plants, and it had been published in the Petroleum Engineer magazine, and the magazine was laying on his desk. He wanted to know what I was wanting and what I could do. I told him I knew they were going to build this pipeline and there'd have to be pump stations on it. I would like the job of engineering those pump stations and installing them. He wanted to know what I knew about pumps. I told him I'd worked with pumps in the natural gasoline plants for about 10 years. He says, what do you know about gasoline plants? There's everything anybody else knows and some things that some people don't know. I've got an article in that magazine laying there. He grabbed it up and looked and says, sure as hell have. And he looked at it some and he says, well, come back Saturday. This was the day before Thanksgiving. He says, come back Saturday and I'll tell you something. So I went back home down to Kiefer, the plant, golf plant, while I was still living in the company house while on vacation. And we were getting ready to go to Dorothy's folks for over Thanksgiving. While I was shaving, a neighbor came over and said I was wanted on the city telephone. So I went over and talked with this man, Williams Brothers. He said, we'd like for you to go to Michigan. I said, wait a minute, I wasn't talking about Michigan and I didn't see you. I was talking about Georgia. He said, oh, but we need you worse than Michigan. And I said, what's doing? He says, building a gasoline plant. I said, well, what's the pay? He says, $200 a month. I said, no soap. And he said, well, okay. I said, now I'll come back and talk to you if you want. He said, well, okay, if you're coming back through here. Went back through and talked to him. He didn't up the salary any, so I told him no, I wouldn't go to Michigan for that amount of money. And build a gasoline plant in December. It's just not worth it. He says, well, okay. It's about quitting time. He walked down.